Welcome to this week's edition of Far West Texas. Readings from the Big Bend Sentinel, the Monahans News, and the Fort Stockton Pioneer, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Big Bend Sentinel for Thursday, August 15th, 2024. Marfa City Council talks tax rate, appraisal district budget by Mary Cantrell. MKCANTRELL at BigBendSentinel.com. Marfa. The Marfa City Council met this week to approve a preliminary tax rate for budget season and to hear from the Presidio County Appraisal District, PCAD, on their budgeting needs and operations, which are becoming increasingly complex due to state requirements, officials said. All council members were present with the exception of Mark Morrison. Property tax collection, one of the city's funding sources, is driven by the tax rate. While the tax rate is pending formal adoption, for now, council members chose to go with the voter approval rate, 0.328 per $100 taxable value, a 1.6% increase from last year's tax rate. This is just sort of giving us the go-ahead to work with that rate for the budget, City Manager Mandy Roan said. Mayor Manny Baeza said he plans to present council members with the proposed budget later this month. Last year's taxable values were around $316 million, resulting in a 0.323 tax rate and a $1,022,579 tax levy, which gets distributed to the city's general fund and its debt payments. The city is in the process of paying off a $3 million tax note for street repairs. This year's taxable values are $336,068,084, a 6% increase from the previous year. That's one of the lowest increases we've had in a long time, said City Accountant Dan Dunlap, who was presenting the tax rate summary on behalf of Presidio County Tax Assessor Collector Natalia Williams. This year's voter approval rate, the maximum rate allowed by law without voter approval, will allow $77,500 in additional taxes to be raised. The no new revenue rate, another option council had that would raise the same amount of money as the year prior, is 0.304. Council will formally adopt the tax rate in late September and will soon start the process of posting public hearing dates. Council members also heard updates from Chief Appraiser Cynthia Ramirez on the appraisal district's budget and operations. She requested that council allow the district to retain the city's portion of surplus funds from last year's budget, around $4,000, and that council approve their new budget. The appraisal district is funded by local taxing entities, including the City of Marfa. Ramirez explained that the appraisal district's budget was increasing from $533,752 last year to $656,123 this year due to a number of factors. The district was dropped by its previous valuation contractor, Western Valuation, whom it had worked with for around 10 years at a very reasonable rate, Ramirez said. The new company hired, Pritchard and Abbott Incorporated, is a much larger company who will be sending bigger teams out to the area to assist Ramirez. Their fee is going to be a lot higher than what we were paying Western Valuation. They're going to be coming in at around $43,000, and with Western, we're paying close to $20,000, Ramirez said. Roan asked if existing appraisal district employees could work towards earning advanced credentials, allowing the PCAD to rely less on contractors in the future. Ramirez said her team is working on it, but there are 4 levels of appraisers, and tests to earn higher credentials are very difficult. So for now, she is the only real property appraiser, RPA, in the office, meaning her workload is significant, requiring contractor assistance. The appraisal district also plans to hire a part-time employee to assist with mapping updates, she said. The PCAD's maps were reviewed by the state comptroller's office this year, she explained, and they were docked because the majority of the parcels in the county are not platted. This, plus additional new state requirements, were straining staff, she said. The state has so many mandates now, and with the legislative session that went on last year, they put down more responsibilities on appraisal districts. Ramirez said, we have to take care of more websites. They're putting more and more requirements on the district, which I think is a little bit more stressful on all of us. Ramirez said the budget also includes raises for herself because she is underpaid compared to other area chief appraisers and her staff. The PCAD's expenses are also up, she said, with costs of technology, mapping, and website services increasing. The council voted to approve that the appraisal district keep their surplus from this year and approved their budget for the coming year. The increase to the city's payment is less than $9,000, Baeza said. I think we can absorb this cost, he said. Council member Eddie Payares, who serves as a city council representative on the appraisal district board, said long discussions were had about the various budget increases, but in the end, everyone agreed they were needed to support the district and its staff. It's a lot of money, but we do want to keep Ms. Ramirez and all of the employees, as well as give them as much as we possibly could afford, Payares said. We're ready to support it. Staff photo by Maisie Crow. Caden Olson, 13, from Rio Rico, Arizona, and other kids practiced roping outside the arena at the Big Bend Ranch Rodeo Saturday evening. Alpine woman sees murder sentence drop from 37 to 2 years with sudden passion verdict. By Rob D'Amico. Rob at BigBenSentinel.com. For Stockton, an Alpine woman facing almost 36 more years in prison for a murder conviction received the news she had hoped for on Monday. A successful new sentencing trial with a jury verdict resetting her term to 2 years, which could be about 10 months, factoring in time already served. The second trial, held in Fort Stockton from last Tuesday to Monday before 83rd District Judge Robert Cardena, was not to decide whether Lizette McGuire of Marathon was guilty of first-degree murder for running over her on-again, off-again boyfriend, Akias Armendariz Gonzalez of Alpine, in 2018, since a jury had already found her guilty of first-degree murder on June 20, 2023. District Judge Roy Ferguson, who presided over the 2023 proceedings, ruled a second sentencing trial could be held to address whether the jury had adequate instructions when giving McGuire her 37-year prison term. Putting the legal distinctions aside, the sentencing trial took on the life of a new trial with many of the same witnesses and a re-examination of forensics and phone records, all put before a brand new jury. Even though the jury was to only decide if a new sentence was needed, many family and friends of Gonzalez and McGuire both viewed it as another look at whether this was really murder or just a tragic accident. It was very clear this was not a murder, said Shane O'Neill, defense counsel for McGuire, along with Julia Belovich, both based in Alpine. Don't turn one tragedy into two, he told the jury in his closing statement, pleading for a reduced sentence. The prosecutor, Assistant 83rd District Attorney Bill Parham, warned the jury not to be fooled by the character McGuire wanted to portray in her testimony, a victim of supposed abuse who became a model citizen in the 5 years she lived before facing trial. This is not a case about sympathy, he said. This is about a cold-blooded murderer. It's devastating, said Annalisa Higgins, Gonzalez's sister, reacting to the 2-year sentence. I do feel the justice system failed us. Drug dealers get longer sentences than this. And she murdered someone. Tears were shed among Gonzalez's family and friends seated on one side of the courtroom, even before the verdict, while the other side included family and friends of McGuire. All we wanted was a fair trial, said Joel McGuire, Lizette McGuire's uncle, after the verdict. I don't see how you get to first-degree murder when there is no premeditation. On April 29, 2018, a Brewster County deputy pulled McGuire over on the highway, where she was charged with a DUI and taken to Alpine for questioning, and ultimately charged with first-degree murder. In the trial last week, police and prosecutors contended McGuire purposely ran over Gonzalez, an Alpine resident, then 37, with her SUV on April 29, 2018, after a late-night heated argument involving their relationship and custody of their son. Much of the trial last week included conflicting testimony from defense and prosecution on whether McGuire fled the scene knowing she had run over Gonzalez, or if she left in a state of fear and panic without even realizing she hit him. The defense intended to prove that McGuire ran over Gonzalez under immediate influence of sudden passion arising from an adequate cause, which could have reduced her sentence to 2 to 20 years during her first trial. The prosecution wanted to prove that her mental state was not a factor, the murder was intentional, and that McGuire should receive 5 to life in prison. Prosecutor Bill Parham wanted 60 years. Looking at the possibility of an even longer prison term, the trial was a gamble for McGuire, but O'Neill said they were confident they could win. The ride to Alpine. Testimony revealed one crux of the case was why McGuire, living in Marathon, drove to see Gonzalez in the early morning hours that April night in 2018. Why she wanted to see him was contentious in the courtroom, with McGuire and her defense saying Gonzalez was getting kicked out of his house by the woman he was living with and had nowhere else to go. Although McGuire and Gonzalez were formerly lovers, it wasn't clear if they were still romantically involved, and McGuire had a husband, Adam Molina, back in Marathon. The prosecution presented a witness who contended that Molina had been intent on heading to Alpine to possibly confront or fight Gonzalez over custody issues involving the young son he had with McGuire. McGuire told the court and police that despite Gonzalez being abusive in the past and her being married to another man, Gonzalez was still the father of their son, and she wanted to be there to help him. The defense presented text messages between the two that showed a friendly exchange that day and into the evening, with later messages indicating that McGuire was on her way to Alpine. She was accompanied by John J. Whitley, then 48, and a longtime Marathon resident. O'Neill questioned why her husband, Molina, wasn't in the car with them, if, as prosecutors contended, he intended to confront Gonzalez that night. Phone records show Gonzalez then called McGuire for about 5 minutes, which McGuire said was partly to get directions to Gonzalez's house. Whitley, in the passenger seat, testified later that he could not hear exactly what the conversation was about. If McGuire and Gonzalez were fighting on the phone call, O'Neill insisted that would have been apparent to Whitley. From calm to the storm. Thanks to conflicting statements, it's difficult to prove how a calm set of conversations that night left Gonzalez dead in front of his home. McGuire told police and testified in court that Gonzalez was outside when she arrived, and he immediately shoved her and screamed at her. "I don't know if he thought my friend was my husband. He became very violent," she said to the police. She also testified that Gonzalez headbutted her. On the stand Monday morning, Whitley told the court Monday that McGuire actually pushed Gonzalez first, but he also described how Gonzalez headbutted him and broke his glasses. He eventually went back to sit in McGuire's car in the passenger seat. What happens next is a blur of conflicting testimony and physical evidence. The defense recounted McGuire's statements to police that Gonzalez suddenly ran to her car to get to Whitley. McGuire said Gonzalez grabbed her by the neck in an attempt to stop her and began slamming her head against the passenger sidecar window, an account backed up by a neighbor who was watching the ordeal. But the prosecution said McGuire was the aggressor and at one point followed Gonzalez into his home before both returned outside. Whitley said she told them, "I'm not done arguing yet," after Whitley and the neighbor tried to get her to leave. McGuire did need medical attention the night of her arrest, and Big Bend Regional Medical Center records presented in court showed she had a fractured nose, and photos showed marks around her neck. The prosecution countered that those records also showed McGuire telling a doctor she couldn't clasp her hand because she had hit Gonzalez in the head. Testimony made it clear that McGuire, Whitley, and Gonzalez had all been drinking heavily. A toxicology report showed Gonzalez had a 0.23 blood alcohol content, almost three times the legal limit of 0.08 to drive lawfully. It's unclear when McGuire's blood was tested, but at least a couple hours after her detainment, it was about 0.08. Whitley admitted to being extremely drunk, which led him to not remember many of his interactions and interviews with the police the night of Gonzalez's death. The jury also considered the defense's allegations of physical abuse by Gonzalez against McGuire starting in 2014, allegations backed up by an email she had shared with a relative. The prosecution said there was no physical or photographic evidence to prove that abuse. O'Neill, in closing arguments, said that on the night of Gonzalez's death, McGuire being choked and deprived of oxygen and violently attacked resulted in her jumping in the car and trying to flee the scene. What he said was a clear case of being under immediate influence of sudden passion arising from an adequate cause. The prosecution countered that statute cannot be used for someone provoking this situation that results in the adequate cause, which they contend McGuire, who they believe was the true aggressor, did. The prosecution brought in a surprise final witness brought in on the last day of the trial, Whitley, who also was at the scene of the murder. Whitley testified Monday morning, something he had never told prosecutors or the defense before, that while leaving Gonzalez's home after he had been run over, McGuire told him, "I hope he's dead." Two drive-by shootings earlier that year that suggest mounting tensions also earned a mention at the trial. On February 1, 2018, McGuire's husband, Adam Molina, and Whitley allegedly shot into cars parked outside of Gonzalez's house. A week later, McGuire, Molina, and Whitley also shot at cars in front of the home on February 8th. About a year after Gonzalez's death, Alpine police charged Molina and Whitley with deadly conduct for the latter shootings. It's unclear what charges were filed against McGuire and if any are still pending. The district attorney's office, under former DA Sandy Wilson, offered Whitley immunity against any charges if he testified in McGuire's murder trial. But Parham revoked that immunity, leaving Whitley with the deadly conduct charges over his head. Parham decided on Sunday, before the final day of the trial, to put him on the stand, where he recounted events that seemed to both support and contradict the defense assertions. Defender O'Neill made it clear in closing arguments that Whitley only offered his damning quote, "I hope he's dead," for the first time under threat of prosecution. "He will say just about anything they want," O'Neill told the jury. "They are playing games with his immunity." Marfa ISD faculty welcomes students back to school. Attendance, behavior, top of mind for new principals. By Mary Cantrell. MKCANTRELL at BigBenSentinel.com. Marfa, this week marks the start of a new school year for Shorthorns kindergarten through 12th grade, with district faculty welcoming students back to campus Monday morning with festive fanfare. Elementary school students clutching colorful backpacks were greeted by Marfa Junior High and High School cheerleaders. Decked out in full uniform and pom-poms, mascot Bullet and Marfa Police Department officers upon entering the cafeteria. They enjoyed a breakfast of cereal, toast, apples, and a choice of white or chocolate milk before lining up by grade level to head to the elementary campus. Back in the auditorium, junior high and high school students filled the seats as an opening ceremony of sorts began. Counselor David Natividad first introduced all of the teachers, who chose different walk-up songs for their processions towards the stage. Science teacher Laura Loya strolled up to "I Look Good" by Jaylee Boy, while Interim Superintendent Arturo Alferez climbed stage stairs to "The Imperial March," Darth Vader's theme. Students clapped and cheered in support. Alferez gave introductory remarks, welcoming students back to school and reminding them what a great staff we have. He promised a successful year was to come and encouraged students to be patient with teachers and administrators as schedules and classes continued to get worked out. "We've worked so hard over the summer to get classes and programs for you guys," Alferez said. This year, both campuses are under new leadership, with freshly hired principals Rosie Martinez and Dr. Candy Dominguez at the helm of the elementary and junior high and high school campuses, respectively. Martinez and Dominguez are working in tandem to ensure their campuses run similarly, they said. Especially when it comes to school attendance and student behavior, there are targeted areas of improvement moving forward. "If you don't have the kids here and they're not behaving, then there isn't any learning happening," Martinez said. "We need our kids here, and we need them in the classroom, comfortable, happy, without any of the behavioral issues interfering with the education." Martinez, who previously served as the elementary special education teacher, said there were no major behavioral issues taking place at the elementary school. more so just classroom interruptions that could be prevented if students showed continual respect for teachers and peers. On the first day of school, Dominguez refreshed junior high and high schoolers with a presentation on cell phone use, dress code, vaping, bullying, and disciplinary policies. In addition to attendance being a determining factor of student success, it is also a determining factor of school district funding. Last year, the elementary school averaged a 93.48% attendance rate, Martinez said, which she hopes to increase to around 95 to 96%. The average attendance rates for junior high and senior high last year were 89% and 93%, Dominguez said. Her goal is to increase the junior high attendance rate to 94% this year and the high school attendance rate to 96%, she said. It is important to come to school every single day, Dominguez told junior and senior high students in the auditorium on Monday. Absences do add up. Dominguez said she plans to be consistent, calling parents every time a student has an unexcused absence, one that is not approved by school officials, to make sure students don't accumulate a large amount of absences. Parents will also be required to come into the buildings in order to check their students out. Phone calls will no longer be accepted, she said. This year, the district even plans to go as far as involving Judge Dina Jo Marquez, Marfa's Justice of the Peace, who will issue citations to parents with students deemed truant. Students who have 10 or more days of a recorded unexcused absence within a six-month period in the school year are deemed truant by the state standards, Dominguez explained. Marquez said she is still in discussions with district leadership about what the process will look like, but she intends to follow the Texas Education Code, Section 25.093, which allows courts to charge fines in increments of $100 up to $500 for parents contributing to non-attendance. We don't expect to have a problem, but we do have her support, Dominguez said. A parent open house to discuss new, more stringent attendance policies as well as new disciplinary procedures currently pending school board approval is scheduled for September 3rd. Both Martinez and Dominguez stressed the importance of parent and teacher involvement and transparency on the issues. The role of junior high and high school principal was vacant for a year before Dominguez stepped in, meaning she's got her work cut out for her, getting everyone on the same page. We have a lot of work to do, but I am here to provide support and guidance, Dominguez said. I have high expectations from the top down, including myself. We are looking for growth in every capacity. Growth is certainly down when it comes to the district's enrollment. As of Tuesday, the district had a total of 188 students enrolled, 74 at the elementary level, and 114 at the junior and senior high levels. Just 5 years ago, in 2019, Marfa ISD's enrollment was 341 at the start of the school year. Dominguez said administrators are actively recruiting students when possible. Staff photo by Mary Cantrell. Marfa Elementary student Aliana Wilmarth high-fives Shorthorn mascot Bullet as she arrives for the first day of school, accompanied by mom, Lori.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Monahan's News for Thursday, August 15th. School to pay over $9.8 million in recapture. The story was written by Jan Cranfield. A Monahan's Wicket Paiute ISD special board meeting took place at 6 p.m. Wednesday in the Administration Building boardroom to discuss the final ad valorem taxable values, the school's Chapter 49 status, and other required budget information. A quorum was established with all board members Armando Flores, Josh Schwab, Josh Barbie, Donna Garcia, the board president, Steve Tuxhorn, Nancy Upchurch, and Steve Fine, present for the called meeting. Business manager Katie Jones presented the board with the final ad valorem taxable values and how the new circuit breaker limitation law affects the district. Circuit breaker is a targeted property tax reduction program that operates like an electric circuit breaker, only instead of involving electricity, it caps the increase of your property's taxable value to 20% per year unless there have been improvements to the property. This new law that went into effect in January of 2024 applies to real property and minerals. Jones reported, quote, "The certified final values as of July 23rd of this year was $4.6 billion, and at this time last year, it was $4.8 billion. It's gone down since last year, mainly because of the circuit breaker law," end quote. The preliminary values as of April 29, 2023, were $5.092 billion, with the certified final values as of July 23, 2024, being $4.626 million, a difference between prelims and final of $466 million. The actual certified final values as of July 24, 2023, $4.885 million, compared to certified final values as of July 23, 2024, for $4.626 million, making a difference of $259 million. The proposed tax rates for 2024-2025 will remain the same as 2023-2024, which is maintenance and operations at 66 cents and interest and sinking at 34 cents, for a total of $1.01. Quote, "Our budget priorities and changes are to provide salary increases of at least 2% to all employees, plus STEP for employees on schedules, to add funding to outfit the police force, increase funding for property insurance, to add funding for equipment at the complex, to include funding for an incentive payment for staff, increase funding for employee health insurance due to increase in premiums, and cover an increase in utilities," Jones told the board. The salary increase totals $418,000. Employee retention stipend is $500,000. Police officer supplies increase $75,000. Property insurance with a 43% increase is $1,083,000. Complex equipment at $80,000. Health insurance increase for $150,000. Utilities increase is $315,000. The appraisal district, $435,000. The recapture payment due at the end of August is $9,874,000. 2024-2025 bond payment of $6.3 million. The budget consists of 58% allotted to payroll, 26% for recapture. In another agenda item, Assistant Superintendent of Support Service Jeff Jones informed the trustees of the Texas Education Agency safety visit to Parkway Elementary. Quote, "TEA came on July 25th to inspect the safety implementations at Parkway, and they were impressed with the school's safety status. They said that we are way ahead of the curve, and they want to use Parkway as a model school for safety and bring in other school personnel to see what we did, Jones said. In an action-needed agenda item, the board gave a yes vote to the Chapter 49 Option 3 agreement for the purchase of attendance credit. MWPISD has been designated as a Chapter 49 or wealthy school district and therefore must make a determination on how funds will be returned to the state in order to equalize the wealth across the state's school districts. The option MWPISD has chosen allows for the purchase of attendance credits from TEA. The district will pay one payment of $9.8 million for Chapter 49 recapture on or before August 15th to make up for the difference in the amount that the district has earned through taxes to educate each child and the amount that the state has determined is necessary in order to educate each child. Because MWPISD has raised an amount significantly greater per child than what the state says is necessary, the district will have to return monies back to the state as part of the wealth equalization program. The board met in closed session to discuss personnel hiring contracts for the coming year. After reconvening into public session, the board voted to approve the personnel contracts, which included Riley Barmore for a 10-month contract at Parkway teaching 5th grade math, Luis Villarreal, 10-month contract as a MHS science teacher, and a teaching agreement with Jasmine Luna as a pre-K teacher at Colander. A public hearing for the proposed 2024-2025 budget and 2024-2025 tax rates is set for Monday, the 26th, at 6:20 p.m., just before the regularly scheduled school board meeting, which begins at 6:30 p.m. This will take place at the MWPISD Administration Building Boardroom at 606 South Betty. Any individual who has a concern or question can request to be placed on the board meeting agenda. Anyone interested in addressing the Board of Trustees needs to pick up a registration form from the administration office. Individuals may only address issues which are listed on the agenda, which is posted 72 hours before the meeting day. They must be registered to speak by 12 noon on the day of the meeting and will have 4 minutes to speak. The public is encouraged to become involved in affairs concerning our students. Winkler to house local inmates. Tax rate increased 7 cents. The story was written by Jan Cranfield. Ward County Commissioners approved renewing an agreement with the Winkler County Sheriff's Department to house local inmates in the Winkler County Jail. The agreement is ongoing with Winkler County and periodically taken advantage of when the Ward County Jail is overflowing, as is the case at the present time. Quote, "We have 8 to 10 inmates over in the Winkler County facility at this time," Ward County Sheriff Ferran Valle said. The agreement with Winkler County is at the rate of $62 per day per prisoner, and Winkler County shall bill Ward County on a monthly basis for said cost by an itemized statement showing the number of days per each individual prisoner. Winkler will charge the per diem fee the day the inmate is booked in, but the day the inmate is returned or released will not be charged. Ward County Sheriff's Department uses this agreement when the local jail is in overflow capacity and Winkler County has the available space. Other facilities can be used, but the Winkler County Jail is the closest. This is the first time in over a year that Ward County has had to house inmates in the Winkler County facility. In other matters, the commissioners also approved Ward Memorial Hospital's request to hire a part-time, as-needed, mental health counselor. Ava Collazo works full-time for West Texas Centers, but has agreed to be available for Ward County. Colosso's pay rate will be $38 per hour with a start date of July 28th. Approving indigent care guidelines was another agenda item approved by the commissioners. Ward County uses the Rules and Procedures Fund and the County Indigent Healthcare Handbook, published by the Texas Department of Health and Human Services. Ward County will only approve and pay the standard payment rates determined by the Department of State Health Services. Ward County has adopted to classify all jail inmates as medically indigent. Also, Ward County has adopted the option service of diabetic medical supplies and equipment. Application forms for indigent care may be obtained from the Ward County Indigent Clerk, located in the Ward Memorial Hospital, located at 406 South Gary. Assistance in completing the application will be provided if needed. In other business, the commissioners approved a contract change order from C.K. Newberry, LLC, concerning the seal coating of roads in Precinct 3. The original bid was for $1,491,000, and the change request is for an additional $372,000, a 25% increase. The contract time frame started April 15th and is set to conclude December 31st. Also covered by the commissioners was approving a district court order concerning compensation for the county auditor and assistant auditors for 2025. The salary for the county auditor was approved for a yearly amount of $117,000, with an additional $5,500 available to cover travel and expenses and dues for attendance to seminars, conferences, workshops, area meetings, as well as miscellaneous travel expenses necessary to the performance of official duties. The commissioners also agreed to keep vehicle registration fees at the same rate for the 2025 year and set the tax rate back at 69 cents per $100 value, a slight rise from the current 62 cents per 100, and the same tax rate as 2023. A request from Brazos Delaware Gas to cross County Road 128 with a 6-inch steel fuel gas pipeline to be buried approximately 72 inches deep. Commissioners also approved several regular business items, such as approving past meeting minutes, approving paying the county bills, approved the officers' reports, voted yes on county and hospital budget amendments, and approved the bond and oath for county clerk. Commissioners present at Monday's meeting were Precinct 1 Tino Sanchez, Precinct 2 Commissioner Larry Hanna, Precinct 3 Commissioner Dexter Nichols, Precinct 4 Commissioner Eddie Nelms, and Ward County Judge Greg Holly. A public hearing for the county budget and tax rate is set for Monday, August 26th, which is the regularly scheduled next meeting, to be held at 9:30 a.m. in the Ward County Courthouse at 400 South Allen. Individuals who would like to address the court to ask questions or inform the commissioners of problems in their precinct or Ward County can call Judge Greg Holly at 432-943-3209, discuss their question or concern, and ask to be placed on the agenda for the next commissioners' meeting. City Council recognizes MPD's Excellence in Training Award. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. Meeting in regular session on Tuesday, the Monahans City Council heard a presentation by Monahans Chief of Police Christopher Quintana on the police department recently being named the recipient of Lexapol's Excellence in Training Award for 2023. Lexapol is one of the nation's leading content, policy, and training platforms for public safety agencies. The Connect program tracks performance on 5 metrics proven to measure success in policy management, which includes policies issued, updates pending, daily training bulletins issued, policies acknowledged, and daily training bulletins completed. Quote, "We have been using Lexapol to maintain a consistent and professional response to the community we serve." Silver, the second highest recognition level, shows that the department has not only kept its policy manual up to date, but also had officers acknowledge new and updated policies and complete more than 80% of daily training bulletins. Changes in the law occur frequently, and the Monahans community benefits from officers who are knowledgeable about those changes. Well-informed, well-trained officers help the police department deliver services more efficiently, Quintana said. Present for the meeting were City Manager Rex Thee, Mayor Adam Steen, and Councilman Jeppy Wilson, Richard Hawkins, Calvin Carroll, Ivy Valenzuela, and Gerald Stava. In other presentations, Chevron representative Jonathan Harshman was on hand for a meeting to present the Monahans Fire Department with a check for $10,000 to help purchase new bunker gear for the firemen. Bunker gear, or turnout gear, is the protective clothing worn by firefighters. One average set of bunker gear cost approximately $3,000. Fire Chief Randy Crabtree was on hand to accept the donation. In other business, tax rolls from Ward County Appraisal District for $622 million and $17 million from Winkler County was accepted by the council. In street closures, the council agreed to temporarily close a portion of East 13th Street between Stewart Avenue and East Monahans Parkway on September 14th from 5 to 10 p.m. for a food truck event at the Event Center Park. In routine matters, the council approved Code Enforcement Officer's report regarding properties in violation of city code for either trash or weeds, items in the alleyway, and or dangerous structures. The properties have all been given a first notice and did not comply, so this will allow code enforcement to follow up on a final notice and possibly move forward with court action if needed. Those reported to still be in violation are 300 South Gale, owned by Eddie and Mina Tavares, 801 North Doris, owned by Doreen Scoggin, 400 South Dwight, owned by Medium S. Marquez, 700 East C Street, owned by Yvette T. and Margaret Chapman, 701 East B Street, owned by Ramon Hernandez, 503 West Sealy, owned by Lucino Lerma, 901 North Carroll Street, owned by John D. Moya, 804 East B Street, owned by Herbert Jason Smith, and 715 North Betty, owned by Jarvis Deloche Quincy. Once a second notice is issued, the property owner has 10 days to comply, or the case could be turned over to Monahans Municipal Court for further action. In final actionable items, the council approved the MEDC fiscal year budget totaling $1,490,000 and the annual service agreement between the city and MEDC totaling $206,000. The city council meets every second and fourth Tuesday of the month at 3 p.m. Anyone wanting to address the city council on the topics addressed in the story or any other topic may do so by asking to be added to the meeting agenda in the city secretary's office, located inside City Hall, or by appearing at the meeting during the public comment section of the meeting, which is on every agenda. The council will meet again on August 27th in the council chambers of City Hall, located at 112 West 2nd Street at 3 p.m. the meeting is open to the public. Former Monahan's News editor publishes book. Paul Cipher's newly released book, Deciphered, is a diverse collection of engaging short articles originally published as editorial columns in the Monahan's News during his years at the Monahan's News. Cipher's, a United States Air Force veteran, former journalist, and a native of Wink, said, quote, "You'll laugh, you'll cry, and find thought-provoking articles and commentary in this collection of over 70 short articles." The book is a culmination of over 70 short articles that try to make sense of different things, hence the title Deciphered, a play on the author's last name. The writings are divided into three subtopics: Just for Fun, Commentary, and Reminiscing. The first section will elicit a chuckle, while the second offers thought-provoking comments and, at times, biting commentary. The concluding section is reminiscing about the joys and sometimes poignant memories of the author's life. The articles have been written over a period of about 12 years, targeted for small West Texas newspapers. After his retirement, the author put these short stories into this collection. The articles are in the range of 600 to 700 words and are deliberately written in easy-to-understand language, designed for the enjoyment of readers from late grade school to highly educated, discerning adults. The book is also family-friendly that readers will not find offensive. In his years of experience in writing articles covering meetings, conducting interviews, and local events, the author's unique writing style has been conveyed in this collection of short articles. End quote. Published by Christian Faith Publishing, Cipher's new book offers a delightful assortment of articles that entertain, provoke thought, and evoke nostalgia, catering to readers of all ages and backgrounds. Cipher's will be in Monahan's August 20th for a book signing from 3 to 5 p.m. at the Ward County Library, and then will be the guest speaker for the weekly Monahan's Rotary Club's weekly meeting on Wednesday, August 21st. Consumers can purchase Deciphered at traditional brick-and-mortar bookstores or online at Amazon.com, Apple iTunes Store, or Barnes & Noble. For additional information or inquiries about Deciphered, contact the Christian Faith Publishing Media Department at 866-554-0919. Ward County Sheriff's Office deputies nab two felons with firearms. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. Ward County Sheriff's deputies arrested two convicted felons after they were both found to be in possession of firearms in unrelated incidents last week. The first occurred during a routine walkthrough of the Yellow Rose Game Room, located at 2643 South Loop 464 on Tuesday, August 6th, shortly before 8 p.m. According to Captain Rudy Ozuna, quote, "While on the walkthrough, deputies made contact with Donathan Eric Pinson, age 22, of 1604 South Betty Street, who was sitting at a slot machine in the back of the game room. During a pat-down, Pinson told the deputies he had a firearm on his person. Deputies located the weapon, a black Glock 42 380 caliber handgun, along with suspected narcotics. Quote, "During the search incident to arrest, deputies located 10.5 grams of a white crystallized substance, suspected methamphetamine, on property belonging to Pinson," he added. Through the course of the investigation, deputies learned the handgun located on Pinson was stolen from the Candlewood Suites earlier the same day. Pinson was subsequently arrested and charged with possession of a controlled substance, penalty group 1, more than 4 grams, less than 200 grams, unlawful possession of a firearm by a felon, and theft of a firearm. His bonds were set at $25,000 and $15,000 and $10,000. He remains in custody in lieu of posting the $50,000 bond. The second incident occurred on Thursday, August 8th, around 12:30 a.m. during a routine traffic stop. Deputies were patrolling in the 300 block of West 22nd Street and stopped a Tahoe for having an obstructed license plate. Quote, deputies spoke to the driver, Jackie Dwayne Smith, age 55, of 2111 South Betty, and Smith consented to a vehicle search. During the search, deputies located a black Ruger 22 handgun in the open space under the vehicle's cup holders, Ozuna said. Smith was subsequently arrested and taken to Ward County Jail and charged with unlawful possession of a firearm by a felon. Smith's bond was set at $25,000. He posted the bail and was released.
Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of Far West Texas. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.